Something in that neighborhood.
I'm getting warmed up already. I wished I could see what goes on in my head when he starts to work on me. I wished I could see. I really would like to see a picture of what it looks like, what's going on, the activity in here. No, I would. I'd like to see it. Just once. I mean, it might be scary, but I'd just like to see it once, what's going on inside. Oh, they're seen to the Spirit. Oh, in the Spirit you can see it. Oh, in Spirit you see everything. What's hidden to the Spirit? Nothing. It's invisible to the natural eye, but to the Spirit you can see what's going on. Everything. What? Visions, yeah. Even more than that, by the Spirit, you'll see more than a fly would. You can see everything by Spirit. What's hid from the Spirit? Nothing. So see everything. Does anybody have it marked where I left off last week? I didn't do 24? Okay. Yeah, verse 24 is another context, really. I'll read this. Matthew 10, verse 24. The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his Lord. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call them of his household? Fear them not, therefore, for there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known. What I tell you in darkness, that speak you in light, and what you hear in the ear, that preach ye upon the housetops. And fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall to the ground without your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Excuse me. Whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and daughter against mother, and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that takes not his cross and follows after me is not worthy of me. He that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it. He that receives you receives me, and he that receives me receives him that sent me. He that receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he that receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water, only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Let's go back and look at it, see what we got in here. The disciple is not above his master. The word master here is literally teacher. Look it up. Teacher. The disciple, and see, a disciple is a student. True? Look up the word. It says a student, a learner, a pupil. See? So, the student is not above his teacher. We all understand that, don't we? Some people don't. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that don't believe that. They think they're just, everybody's the same. But the teacher is set above the student, isn't it? Didn't Paul even say in Galatians 4 that we're all under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the Father? See? That's a pattern. There's a time for us to set under teachers, and there's a time for us to grow up. But the only time we can grow up and come out from under those governors and tutors is when we mature. As long as we're a little immature person spiritually, we have to have supervision, don't we? And God will have someone there to help you along. Not to dominate and control your life, but to help you come on. That's what the fivefold ministry was about in Ephesians 4 and 11. Apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastor, teacher. They were given to the body of Christ for what purpose? Perfecting the saints and bringing them to the fullness of the stature of the fullness of Christ. See, that maturity. That's what they're here for. Not to tell you how to live your life. Not say do this. Not say don't do that. It's edify, encourage, to lift you up, to show you the way. It's a shepherd giving you a path. And see, a shepherd directs his sheep. He doesn't kick them. The shepherd, you ever see those commercials on TV now about this telephone guy walking around with sheep following him everywhere? See, that's a perfect example of a shepherd. Wherever he goes, what do the sheep do? Why? Because he feeds them. See? That's the only reason they're following him. They know he's going to give them food. He's going to give them water. He's going to take them wherever. Whatever they need, he's going to provide it. See, and that's why the sheep follows him. If a shepherd does his job, the sheep will grow and be healthy and produce the wool, won't they? Right? Okay. So it's a pattern he's trying to show us. He said, nor the servant above his Lord. Literally, the word servant is slave. The slave is not above his Lord or his master, is he? See? Who's he talking about, really? Who's the slave? That's right. It's us. And we're not above our master, are we? But see, most of religion, or Christianity as they want to call it, this Judeo-Christianity is, they say with their mouth, God's in control. But who's carrying the checkbook? God's not doing that. It's what they're doing. If God's in control, why are they driving Mercedes and everybody else driving jalopies? Huh? I mean, if God's in control, God said He wants everybody to have it the same. He's no respecter of persons. I have no problem with anybody having all the nice things. I like them myself. But I don't think you should take them at the expense of the sheep in the flock. I don't think you should slaughter the sheep for your own provision. Okay? He didn't do that, did he? He came to provide for the flock. That's what a pastor is supposed to do, provide for the flock, not take advantage of the flock. And that's what he's trying to say. In religion, there's so much going on. And we think that in ourselves. In a church I was in one time before, this man came in. I kind of think it was a conspiracy now. But this man came in and immediately says, I think you all ought to build this man a new home. And I think you ought to send him on vacation a couple times a year, and two or three times. And you ought to take their kids and keep them for them while they can go out and have their honeymoon and make some more kids, you know. Hey, if you want to send me a honeymoon, I ain't getting no more kids. Well, so I kind of think it was a conspiracy after I thought about it a little bit. But see, that's not what it's about. Jesus said, I come not to be served, but to be the servant. So if someone is truly a pastor, what are they supposed to do? They should be the servant of the church. Didn't he say, the greatest among you shall be what? Your servant. Boy, the church needs to listen. They need to listen. Because if we're not servants, they're not leaders, are they? They're not pastors if we're not servants. That don't mean a whipping boy either. That just means servant. Verse 25, he says, it is enough for the disciple that he be as his what? His master, right? Literally his teacher. He says it's enough to be as his teacher. Well, you know what? The book says whenever he appears, we'll be as him, won't we? We're just like him. And that's good enough for me. I don't have to be superior. All I want to be is like him. And that's the whole goal anyway. And he said, the servant or the slave as his Lord. Now, if I want to be like him, can anybody tell me how I'm going to become like him? How am I going to be like him, Helen?
Am I going to be like him?
Uh-huh. Are you going to work? No. I'm going to experience everything he experienced. I'm going to experience the rejection, the hurt, the accusations, the pain, the suffering, and it'll make me into the very thing he is. It's not a rose garden, is it? Everybody wants the rose garden, but that's not where it's at.
It's in that desert, that Pentecostal experience that we walk through, all those testings and tryings that makes our nature what it is. See? It's not the good things. It's not somebody patting you on the back. Everybody wants people like that around them, don't they? And I thank God for a few of those around. But you know those ones that'll cut your throat, that'll look you in the eye and say, I love you, and then when they walk away, they'll take that knife and walk right across your throat, cut your throat as they walk away. Those are the ones that'll change you because it gives you an opportunity to forgive them. It does. If somebody never does you wrong, how can you manifest Christ on earth if nobody does you wrong, Mike? You better believe it. You're going to find out what's inside of you, and you'll never know what's inside of you. And what's this whole teaching I've been doing on? I see, what makes his mind work? The suffering, the pain, the hurt, the rejection made him think and produced the love in his heart. Is it love in your heart, or is it just words we learn? Because this is what will make it, make you believe what really is in your heart. Whatever it is, one way or the other, you're going to know it's real when you get those tests come on you. You'll know whether it's something someone, religion's told me to do it, because it won't be real. And you know what will happen? You won't really love people when they do you wrong. But see, you'll learn in that process. Don't get excited about it. You'll learn. Then he says, if they have called the master of the house, what? Anybody know what Beelzebub means? The dung god. Anybody know what dung is? It's feces, you know. So he called him the dung god. I won't explain that too much more. It's also Lord of the Flies or the Prince of Evil Spirits. Well, now see, that's what they call it. See, they're saying he's the Prince of the Devils himself. See, but this isn't even talking about Satan. See, they're trying to slander him and say something like that, but everybody would want to say it, but Lord of the Flies. You know, flies swarm around that stuff, don't they? See? Right? That's the truth. He said, how much more shall they call them of his household? Today, people who go to church don't think they should be mistreated in any way. Don't they? Come on. We've all been guilty of thinking this very same process. I'm a son of God. I've been guilty of it myself. I've talked to God and said, why have you let these uncircumcised Philistines do this to me? I'm a son of God. He said, yeah. And you're a Pharisee too. Yeah, that's what he told me. You know what? He was right. I thought because I was the son of God, I had special privileges. Do I? No. I'm just a son. Which one of us isn't? The only difference is some are obedient and some are not. Some obedient, some disobedient. What's the difference? Okay. It don't make me no better than anybody. Doesn't the book say very plainly God is no respecter of persons? He's going to reward them according to their works, isn't he? So it's not up to me. Too quiet in here. Too quiet. I'm getting too close to somebody. Huh? Okay. Verse 26. Fear them not, therefore. What'd he tell you? Don't be afraid of who? The religious hypocrites. Don't be afraid of them. You know what the word fear here is in the Greek? Phobia. Phobia. See? It's a phobia. Do you know how many people have phobias in church? That was a quick one, wasn't it? It's a phobia. Do you know how many phobias there are? Anybody know how many phobias there are? How many people are there? Everybody's got some kind of phobias. And these phobias are nothing more than fears. We have fears about something. Some way of manifesting fear in our life. Is it real? No, only in our minds. It's only in our minds. That's all it is. It's nothing more than here. I've even eaten a few salads here in recent days with onions in them. My last bite, I've made it through this and they didn't get me. Oh! But I don't have a fear about it anymore.
And there's a lot of things now that I can eat cooked onions in. I mean, I had a fear about it. That's one of the worst ones I have is onions. I don't like them. I don't know if you call it a phobia. I just don't like the suckers. I don't. But I don't think I have any fears, what I call phobias, that I'm afraid of something. I don't really have things that repulse me. You know, a lot of people have phobias about a lot of things. You know, now I might be uncomfortable at 85 miles an hour down a mountain up on a tailgate of another vehicle. And I didn't say that was a phobia.
I had a phobia of going 85 on the straight road.
But I mean, you know, we all have things that makes us uncomfortable. See? But that's not really a phobia. That's uncomfortable. See? I'll tell you something that I do have a problem with is great heights. You know, I do have a problem with real heights. I mean, get out on the edge of something, it's like, I don't want to walk out there. I'll go back over here. You know, I won't get near it. And to me, it's wisdom to stay away from it. No, I have no problem flying. No, it's not flying. I'm talking about being on a high place and nothing underneath you. You know, I worked some iron work, and I never liked it. It was very uncomfortable. Working 400 feet in the air on a 6-inch beam, you know, it's just not enough.
Well, when you put that into that kind of concept to your phobia,
mm-hmm.
then I think people would have maybe a better understanding of that it is within
their... It's within our own mind. It's a phobia. That's where we get our word fear, from the word phobia. And it's just a phobia. And we even have that word in our English language, phobia, also. And if you look it up, it says fear. Okay. And if we understand these are just things where? If you realize it's a phobia in our mind, it's not a reality, is it? It's just things we have in mind. And everybody has something they have little phobias about. And those are things we overcome.
You're talking about having fears. It's just like when I was young, I used to like to climb.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd get on the far tower, you know, I'd get on the outside of it and climb on the outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd walk a steel roof, barn
mm-hmm.
roof.
Mm-hmm.
And be like that, and I'd come up the top of it and walk from one end to the other.
You were a thrill seeker.
Yeah, but the fact of it is, I can do that, and yet...
other things were phobias.
How did I develop this fear now? I can watch on television now these guys that are sitting on chairs, you know, on the edge of a cliff and stuff, and fear coming into me.
That shows you it's a phobia. It's affecting you internally when you see someone else even do it. Yeah, well, because you've learned, see... Phil.
I mean, I didn't ever plan to cause that fear.
Fear is a learned process. Children are not born with fear.
That's true.
See, it's a learned, a phobia is something you learn.
Uh-huh.
You learn that. You pick it up from society. They tell you things. Your mind will tell you things that's false. Fear is the exact opposite of what?
Faith.
Faith. See, if I believe what God says, He said, you have power over all the power of the enemy, and nothing by any means shall hurt you. And why should I be afraid? See, I'm just telling you. I'm hearing it myself, just like I'm talking to you. See?
What I'm saying is, I wonder how I developed that.
You learned it.
What taught me to do that?
Your mind.
What taught me to start fearing?
Your mind. Your mind.
You would think that.
Your mind.
Yeah.
Your mind. Your mind. Well, right. You know, the thrill of that living on the edge, that adrenaline rush, people like that.
Yeah.
But you can get to a point where your mind convinces you after a while, it's, what was that?
Pain overrode
the pleasure. Sure. And sometimes it's common sense. You finally get to a place where you begin to mature and you realize, hey, I have. I used to love to get in my boat and go 65, 70 miles an hour. And now, if I get in Larry's boat, he always lets me drive and he don't want to. And he'll say, won't you go faster? Fast enough. We'll get there. You know, I don't like to run the speeds anymore. It's just because it's not comfortable. It's just not comfortable.
Now you understand about your driving. It
didn't need to bother me, but that's Revelation. But everything about a fear. If you would realize every fear that you have is a phobia. That's where the word comes from. It's all here. It's not a reality. What you believe about this fear, it's a lie that's coming to your mind. It's your mind is lying to you about what's going on.
This week, we got a tape from David Skinner's church.
this guy preached a real passionate message because the Lord had woke him up and told him to search out the word redefine. Well, the way that we redefine things is like what you said, it's, they're already defined inside,
mm-hmm.
but we redefine it by making them come outward.
Right.
And make them manifest into something that they're not.
Right. A phobia is a is something that's birthed in our mind that is a lie that our mind has told us about something. We have a fear about it. You know, some people have a fear of being in close places. They got all kinds of phobias listed, you know. Fear of spiders, what they call it, arachnophobia. They got a name for each one of them. Because they're making money at it. So if they put a name on it, they can prostitute that or merchandise it, you know, and sell it to somebody and put a medicine on it. They put a name on it. Sure. They outwardly defined it, what was going on inside. And rather than taking authority over it, we believe those things. That's all. Yeah. Tell it don't have any authority. See, didn't he say he gave you power over all the power of the enemy there in Luke? Well, then what power didn't he give you power over? Anybody got an answer to that one? What don't you have power over? Well, now wait a minute. He said he gave you power over all the power of the enemy. He didn't say husbands or wives. See? And the enemy, and the book says very clearly, is the carnal mind. Okay? So he gave us power over the carnal mind. That's our whole problem. If people could get out of pointing fingers at this, 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 and this, and say everything is between my ears. It's all there. All this is going on internally. If we could just see this. And know, that's the mind of Christ when you know where it's at. Jesus knew where it was at. That's why he could deal with every situation. He wasn't ignorant about it being internal. Everything was internalized in his life. Okay. That was just the first word of 26. Okay. He said, "Fear not them, therefore, because there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and nothing, should say, and nothing concealed that shall not be known." Everything that's buried, all these lies that are hidden within our mind, all these phobias that he's talking about, will be what? Revealed. Okay? It'll be revealed. And when it's revealed to you that this is just a phobia, like I'm telling you right now, guess what? I'll use one. Take a hike. You're out of here. I'm not listening to you anymore. And that's exactly what it is. That's right. It's taking every high thing, exalts itself against the knowledge of Christ, you know, casting it down. Every high thought and every imagination, where's that at? See? Same thing. We've got to know that this thing is just an internal thinking working in our mind. It's that natural thinking that was in us from the very first when God placed us into the human body, placed His Spirit in there, that thinking process was in there. And it was wrong. And we've lost our identity. Verse 27, "What I tell you in darkness," or literally ignorance, "that speak you in light," or within illumination. Okay. God's going to tell us in our darkness, in our ignorance, He's going to tell us things. But when we speak them out of our spirit, they'll come out in what? In light, in illumination. In us. It's illumination in us first. But see, if I am a candle and my wick hasn't been fired up, what good am I? Well, good, if I can't savor the world or flavor the world, what good am I? Okay. It has to be exposed. That light has to come out of us. We can't just keeping it internal. Once we get it, then now we've got to release it. The same thing about the tabernacle. And I think if you look at the old patterns, everybody's preaching that we're supposed to be heading into the tabernacle. But when you get there, guess what? You're coming back out. Okay. Where's it coming from? It's coming from within. The Holy of Holies is within us. See? And so it's coming out of us and not going in. The church has got everything in the wrong direction, haven't they? They got everything backwards. That's right. They have it all backwards. Okay. And he said, "What you hear in your ear," and he's not talking about this piece of flesh on the side of your head. He's talking about your spiritual ear. If you have ears to hear, remember? He wasn't talking about these pieces of flesh on the side of our head. He was talking about our spiritual ear. He said, "What you hear in the ear, preach you upon the housetops." say, preach it from up here. Preach it to this thing up on top. I know one time I got up on the top of the house up here and preached, but, you know, that was a long time ago. I did. People could hear me all through the valley. They didn't want to, but they heard me. Yeah. Well, I had zeal. Didn't have much knowledge, but I had a lot of zeal. Verse 28, and fear not, again, the phobia. Don't have any phobias about them which kill the body. But don't have any phobias about somebody killing you. Don't worry about it. What can they do? See, my book tells me they can't touch you. Read the book of Job. He can't touch you. Only God can touch your life. Didn't he say that? Satan said to Job, or Satan said to God, said, you put forth your hand and touch Job and he'll curse you and die. Now, later on in the book he says, in all the things that Job did, he never sinned with his mouth. Wonder where all the sin comes from. Right there. Out of there.
Now, I have a question about that.
Yes, ma'am.
Satan said to God. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me show you something. Job, right before Psalms. Turn there, Job chapter 1.
Would... I mean, Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Is it God's mind?
Satan is not God's mind. No, it's our mind.
I mean, he said to God,
test
my servant Job.
He said, have you considered my servant Job?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me
so
find a verse.
Satan is your mind.
Mm-hmm. Satan, well, it's a thought process. It's in your mind. It's that
okay.
Accuser.
Was that God's mind saying to God?
No. You've got something twisted. Let me help you. Turn to Job chapter 1, verse 6. We'll start there. I'll show you. If we get it straight, then you'll understand it. If you're confused in it, then we're locked in it, so we've got to get it straight. I don't mind getting it straightened up. Job chapter 1, verse 6. Right before Psalms. Well, you know what mine is? 555. It is. 1, verse 6. Okay. We there? Chapter 1 of Job, verse 6.
Okay.
Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came, not among them, but in them. Okay? It's just a preposition, and the prepositions could be any number of them, so it was in them. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence came thou? And when Satan answered the Lord and said, going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. Now, what are we made out of? See? He was running around all over our heads, up and down all through us, okay? And he says, the Lord said to Satan, see, if he was a devil, what they say, he wasn't looking for nobody. God went to him and said, have you considered my servant? Right? So he says, have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him in the earth. A perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and eschews or hates evil. Then Satan answered the Lord, or literally said to the Lord, does Job fear you for naught or for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he has on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance increases in the land. But put forth your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to the face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power, only upon himself put not forth your hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. He couldn't touch. If there was a real devil that people want to talk about, he has no power to touch you.
Well, this is
it's us. It's humanity. Job is us. And we got to read this as you being Job and know that you can't be touched. Because God said so. Right? See, God says that you can't be touched by something called a devil. You can't. See, it's our lack of understanding that gives any ground for him to work at.
You asked a question about it, was Satan in God's mind? No, he was in the people he was talking to. They were reporting back.
Yeah. So this Satan is the accuser of the mind, the serpent that accuses the mind. Where does the serpent live and what does he eat? The book says that the dust is the serpent's food. See, as long as we live in these dust realms, that serpent has a place to grow, to food, to multiply, and create all kinds of things in our head, all kinds of thinking processes. But when we come to the heavenlies, guess who's left out? See, and we're already seated in heavenly places, but we have to realize this in our mind. He has, this thing that they have created is they've created another God is what they've created. They have made Satan or a devil into a person almost as powerful as God. Well, some of them think he's more powerful. Yeah. It's just a big paper tiger blowed up in something that's nothing. And it's really, the whole thing is about an internal God working in me and changing my internal parts, which control my external, and getting it in order so it will set my external in order. And how does this involve some devil? See, someone has made this up. I don't care what they say. You know, it's not real. And when I came to the understanding that there is no devil that I have to fight about and fight with and go out and, like I said, Michael contended with the devil or whatever, you know, good grief, come on. Who is Michael? One who is like God is what his name means. See? That's all. What was the other angel's name? Gabriel. And his means basically the same thing if you look it up, the one who's like God. Who are we talking about? Christ. Isn't that us? See? We're the ones. And we have to contend with who? Satan, the devil. See, our thinking process. When they talked about him hindering Daniel's prayer for 3 weeks, well, that'll hinder your prayer. I guarantee you it will. Okay? So don't worry about it. So don't worry about that thing or that personality they've created, because it's all false. When I come to the understanding, here it is, guess what? Who's in control of what's going on in here? You are.
Is that when Jed came to the place of comfort?
Mm-hmm.
He thought he had everything.
Sure he did.
He had
it figured out, but he had one thing. He had
his conversation.
Well, sure, that's what went on. Sure. And you know what? The verse right before I started, verse 5, or in that chapter 1, will tell you what his problem was. Read that verse.
Five?
Yeah, what's it say? Read out loud.
And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings, according to the number of them all. For Job said, it must be that my sons have sinned.
His fear was, he was fearful for his children. See? And the very thing that he was afraid of come and bit him.
Oh, he was
fearful for his children. Does that sound familiar? What do parents do? They worry.
Trying to
protect them. You can't.
He was doing sacrificial rites for all.
He was doing sacrifices for all his kids, for their sins. See, isn't that what the church is trying to do? Isn't that what people try to do with their children? He didn't want one. See, religion tells you the sacrifices. So you see what I mean? The fear is what we're all dealing with, these phobias. We gotta realize that they're not reality. Okay? Where did I leave off at? 28. And fear not them which are able to kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul. But rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in where? Guyana. Okay. It's really, Guyana is the garbage dump that's burning outside of Jerusalem. It's in a waste pit, you know. I know everybody wants to make that literal hell that's burning with fire and all that, and it's not. But what does it say?
Don't be afraid of those who kill only your body, but can't test your soul. fear only God, you can destroy both soul and body in hell.
See, but the word hell is not really hell, it's Gehenna, which is the garbage dump that burns outside of Jerusalem in the Valley of Hinnom. And then he says, are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall to the ground without your father or without your father's knowledge. Right? So if one bird drops out of the sky, who knows it? He's trying to tell you something. This is what's called a hyperbole. You know what a hyperbole is? It's an exaggeration to bring a point to it. You understand what I mean? At the end of John, when he said, if all the things that Jesus had done was written in a book, the world could not contain them. Is that a truth? Everything that Jesus had done in those 3 years could have been written, couldn't they? You could have sat there and wrote every word that he spoke, and you could have put it in a book, and you could have put them in this room. True or false? Isn't that right? I'm not showing you that the Bible's wrong. I'm showing you that this is what they call a hyperbole. It's an exaggeration to bring emphasis to a point you're trying to show. He wasn't trying to say that Jesus done so much he couldn't keep track of it. He's just saying he'd done a whole lot of good things. Does that make sense? He's just trying to show you that. If we try to read it literally, we're going to say, well, that's not true. Because it could have all been written in a book. It was just to bring emphasis to a point of how great a works he had done. Okay? And that's what he's saying here. It's a hyperbole. Whosoever, therefore, shall confess... And this word confess literally is acknowledge or covenant. Same word. Acknowledge or covenant. Me before men or before humanity, him will I also confess or acknowledge or covenant before my Father which is in heaven or in the Spirit. See? So he says, anybody who makes a covenant with me, I'm going to make a covenant with you. Right? And I'm going to do it with my Father's approval and in His presence. But if you don't, guess what? What did He say He's going to do with them that don't? But whosoever shall deny Me, and that word deny is literally contradict or reject. Do you know how many people contradict God? They say they love God, but they contradict God. They argue with God. See, contradict is an argumentative thing, isn't it? It's contradict or and or reject God. Now, many people reject Him. We say, oh, well, okay, that's going against God. But how many people contradict God in their lifestyle and in their words and still say they love God? Okay? That's what we have to sort out here. We have to get away from this. If we contradict God, we're arguing with God. Many people say they love God, but yet they argue with God in their lifestyle or they argue with Him in Scripture. No. No, you question why God. No, that's not what I'm saying. They want to say that's not right. They think that they have a better understanding or what God's doing is not the way it should be done. See, self's on the throne, and they think that what they're saying and they're doing is more important or what is more correct than what God is doing because they don't like the situation. I'm going to tell you, the flesh has never loved what God's doing. Has it? So, it's normal. But see, we have to come to a place where we understand that when we wrestle against God, just like Jacob did in his ignorance, and it's ignorant to wrestle with God. That's ignorance, isn't it? When we wrestle with God and we wrestle with truth, just say it this way. How many things have I said in here that has been contradictive to a lot of things you heard when you first came? See? And how many people have stood up and argued with me about them? Didn't make it not true. It just meant they wanted to argue because they felt like what they believed was more important than what really is the truth. Because I don't care what anybody believes. I have to say what God gives me. Right? Jesus made a lot of people angry by just telling the truth. Do you think it's any different today? He said we're going to be just like our master. Sure. Humanity loves to be lied to. Jesus said, man or humanity loves darkness. They don't love the light. The light's the truth. The darkness is the ignorance. They love it because it conceals their deeds, at least in their mind. Okay? Okay, verse 34. So we have to remember not to contradict and reject the things that God says. advice to anybody. This is to anybody that hears the word I'm saying. Don't reject. Look at everything. With an open mind, look at everything you hear. Don't reject. See? I talk to people all the time and say, well, I just can't get a hold of that. That's okay. Don't reject. See? Don't argue with God about it. Set it on a shelf and let God bring it back to you when it's time. See, we have this understanding that my mind and God's mind's hooked up and I understand everything God says. I'm going to tell you something. That ain't true. There's been a whole lot of things that I didn't agree with when God showed them to me. And I had to say, huh, there ain't no way. God said, just hang on, son, I'll show it to you. And when he took away the first thing, the first biggie from me, I went and checked it out and studied it out and everything. I said, okay, I'll give you that one. But you ain't going to take this one. It was gone. Just that quick. He opened my mind to see that what I was believing was wrong. And every time I tried to contradict him, he'd just blow it away. And I found out real quick, it doesn't do any good to wrestle with God. He's going to win no matter what. He's never wrong. If anybody's going to be wrong, who's it got to be? Me. See? And everybody's got to come to that revelation. I must decrease and he must increase. And I asked him one time, can't I ever be right once? He said, no. So, okay. I can't be right then. Then I've got to learn what he's talking about so I can speak rightly. See, it's not about Dave being right in what he says. I believe what I preach. But it's not me. I'm not preaching Dave. I'm preaching Christ. I'm preaching his word. And when I preach it, I mean it. I believe it. I'm willing to die for it. See? I don't care. So if people don't believe it, it doesn't bother me because it's not me preaching what Dave believes. I'm preaching what God says. So I don't worry about it. Verse 34. Think not that I am come, or literally the word is erkamei, it means appeared. Think not that I have appeared to send peace on the earth. Now, isn't that what the religious system thought? Jesus is going to come and beat up these old bad Romans and let us sit on the throne and have it easy. You know what they thought? Isn't that what the church is teaching today? Jesus is going to come back and just kick all the bad people in the butthole and throw them in the big hole. Now, isn't that what he says? That's what the church is teaching. And then we can just live happily ever after in our robes and fluttering around with our wings and our halos. No, that's what they're teaching us. But look what he said. I didn't come to bring peace to the earth. What did he say he was going to do? He said, I am come to send, not to send peace, but a sword. You're going to laugh at this one. You know what that word is? Dirk. It says dirk in the word. D-I-R-K. Look it up. That word for sword right there is D-I-R-K. That's just a little laugh.
I ain't laughing. I agree with you.
That's what it says. Just a small little knife. Yeah, like a little tiny one. Okay. But anyway, what it's saying here.
Like a
yeah. So he says, I've not come to send peace, but the sword. So he came to bring something. What does a sword do first and foremost? It separates. See, God, from his very beginning, has made separation. He sifted the chaff from the wheat, right? What do you think in the Old Testament all these threshing floors was about? Sifting of everything. Do you realize that separation?
In your in the Living Bible 35 says, I have sons to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law.
Yep. Right. See? He's showing me that's the next verse down we haven't got to yet. Okay?
We're not in
35. We're in 34. Okay. But it's okay, it's still going to go along with it. See, but it's bringing a separation. What is God trying to do in your life? He's trying to separate the spirit from the flesh. He's trying to let you realize that that mind of ours is a liar. Okay? It lies to us. And he's trying to separate it from the mind of Christ. It's already separated, but we don't believe it. It's a finished work, but he's got to show us what's already been done. The separation has been done. Okay? So, he's always trying to show us that we have the mind of Christ. Didn't Paul say we have the mind of Christ? Okay. But we still want to think with two. What James say?
said to man, because I am come or I have appeared to set a man, okay, at variance. What does the word variance mean? You know what the language really says? It says to cut in two parts or alienate. That's what the language is. To cut in two parts or to alienate. And when someone is alienated, what do? They separate from you. True or false? If there's an alienation between two people, they do what? Separate. How many ways has he got to tell you? I come to separate. How many ways does he have to tell us before we understand it? God didn't come to put us together yet. He come to sift out the seed. Do you understand what I'm saying? He come to sift the good seed, the first fruit. And then that first fruit, and he said a grain of corn, it's really a grain of wheat. A grain of wheat cannot produce anything until it goes to the ground and what?
Dies.
Isn't that what Jesus did? Pattern? What do we got to do? Same thing. We've got to go to the ground and die. I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about spiritually. I'm not going to produce anything spiritually in my life until I lay my life down. Again, he said, at variance against his father, and the daughter against his mother, her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Okay? Now this next verse. Oh, is this true? Oh, is it true? And humanity's foes shall be those of his own household. See? And it's really, see, we want to say a man, like me, my family's going to be mad at me. They're not going to be my enemies. See? What he's trying to tell you is, let's don't make it just that way. Let's look a little deeper. Humanity's enemy is humanity. You understand that? The only enemy that humanity has is humanity. Yeah. We could just put that as a label for the message tonight. Everybody, the whole world's nuts. See? The world is what this thing about humanity. That's our problem. See, I'm not saying Dave's problem is all of humanity. Dave's problem is the humanity in Dave. There's humanity's problem. See, my problem is here. See, Mike's problem is Mike. It's not anybody else's life. Same with Ed. Ed's problem is who? Ed. See, it's Ed's humanity. My humanity is what gets in the way of my spirit man from attaining where he's supposed to be. It's my humanity that holds me back. See, again, we can't point out there, can we? We have to get the mind of Christ and realize this is all internal. That's why Jesus never pointed a finger and said, oh, the devil made me do it. See? When he was tempted, he knew what it was. And he knew what would take care of it. It is written. Every man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Everything that Jesus quoted in that passage came right out of Deuteronomy. All those accusations, every one of them was answered right out of the book of Deuteronomy. I think it started in Deuteronomy 4. Okay? So, he said, verse 37, he that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. There's some truth here. You can't love anything more than God. He's a jealous God. He said, I'll have no what? No gods or idols or images. And see, if I have an image in my mind that my wife is more important than God, you know what she is? She's an idol. She's a god. She's a false god. If my children or my grandchildren or my job or anything in my life is more important to me than God and doing His will, it's an idol. You got to hear it.
On the radio today, I heard it too, that this guy made a, they had a survey. And they said that that men worship, or that men, 45% of the men actually thought more of their cars than they thought of their wife and children.
I don't doubt that a bit.
And they named their cars.
Sure. Absolutely. 45%. Probably higher than that. A lot of men lie, you know. Hey, Bill. Probably higher than that. A lot of men lie.
Yeah,
What's your motorcycle's name?
He asked me. I called him into the talk show, and I called him. And he asked me, what's your name, your car? I never get the name of your car.
But you didn't tell him your motorcycle's name, did you?
No, he didn't.
Okay, let's get back with this so we can finish this up. So he's saying anybody who has one of these idols, he's not just talking about a literal son or daughter or anything. He's saying anything that we think in our life that is more important than our relationship with our Father, it's a what? It's an idol. It's just as simple as that. It's an idol. And we got to deal with it. All idols are made for one thing, to be broken. Every idol was broken in the Old Testament, wasn't it? So we got to break all these idols. Don't care what it is. Verse 38. And he that takes his cross and follows after me, takes not his cross and follows after me, is not worthy of me. We can't bear the name Christ if we can't bear the cross. The cross we see in the wrong light. What do we see the cross as? Most people see it as something despised, something with shame tied to it, right? We see it as a horrible instrument of death. True or false? Most people see it that way. But see, cross is the life. He said, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the suffering of the cross. It's got to die before it's going to produce anything. And before Christ could produce the rest of the Christ coming behind him, guess what? He had to die. We have to do the same thing. We can't get around it. Now, I'll touch this thing just because I'm here. It's not about the mind of Christ, but it's just something that everybody has this two-membered cross thing going. Okay, I got to hit it because I'm here. This word for cross here is staros in the Greek. It means a stake, a pole, a post. That's what the language says, staros. It's a stake. You know, these crosses everybody wears on their neck, they put on top of their church buildings and tattoo all over them and all this stuff. Those are a pagan symbol. If you want to have what Jesus was crucified on, this is what the language says it is. One stake. Like that. And if you look in vines, and I think there's a vines right over there in that shelf over there, if anybody wants to look at it, it says not to, it says to be distinguished from this thing. It says to be distinguished from a two-membered cross like this, with the cross piece lowered. It says be distinguished from that. This came about in the 3rd century. They never used that till the 3rd century. When was Jesus crucified? 1st century. 200 and some years later, they come up with a new idea. And you know who that was? Constantine. He had a vision. Saw a circle in the sky with a cross in it. Oh, hallelujah. See? The sign of Tammuz, the sun god.
I wonder how they nailed the hands on the over.
Mm-hmm. They could have went on the side, but I'd say they probably went just like that.
I know the Jehovah's Witnesses are always saying it's a tree.
It was tree. A stake. A tree with the limbs cut off. What is that? A post or a pole? Yeah. That's what it is. See, that's the thing about some of these Jehovah's Witnesses, these other denominations or groups or whatever. They have some truth in it, but they still don't think that he's God. They think he was a man who became God. Well, see, that's that humanistic thinking, that they could be good enough to become God. But my book says from the very beginning, the first thing he created was what? What's the first thing God created? Huh?
Heaven?
No.
Heaven and earth.
No. In the first fruit, it says, not in beginning. In first fruit, God created heaven and earth, Spirit and earth, perfect God and man. He created first fruit before he did anything. And in the 3rd verse of chapter 1 of Genesis, he said, and let there be light. There was no sun, moon, or stars. That was the light of Christ that he created before anything else. The first thing he created was Christ. First thing he's ever created. The light of the world is Christ. That was the first thing created. So, guess what? That was the first thing, and the rest of it just had to follow after. Christ was first. Didn't it say he's the beginning?
Alpha and Omega.
Beginning and the end, the first and the last. He was the first. Okay? But we're not worthy if we don't take up this cross and go on with it, right? Now, verse 39. He that finds his what? You look up the word, it's suke. What's that? That's the soul. He that finds his life, or his soul, shall lose it. And he that loses his soul, same word, suke, for my sake shall find it. See, it's not my life. Well, that's what we think about the flesh, that's life. But my soul is my flesh, really. My life is what? My spirit. I don't have to give up my spirit. Can spirit die? Can it? No. Spirit can't die. The only thing that dies is soul, which is a combination of flesh and spirit. The only thing that's going to die out of that is what? The flesh. Flesh has got to die out of it. Verse 40. He that receives you receives me, and he that receives me receives him that sent me. So he's saying, he that receives you is really receiving who? Who's talking here? It was Jesus, and that was Christ talking through him. So he said, anybody that receives you is receiving me. Now, what's Jesus doing right there? Wow, y'all looking blank. What he's doing, he's giving honor to his brethren. He said, if they've received you, they have received who? Me. Right? He said, if they receive you, they're not receiving you. Who are they receiving? The Christ in you. He's honoring the Christ in you. He's recognizing that he is in you. You see that? That he's giving honor to that Christ is in you. He said, if they receive me, they receive. If they receive you, they receive me. Isn't that telling you that you have Christ in you? Right? So he says, verse 41, he that receives a prophet in the nature or character of a prophet, not onoma, the word onoma, which means name, but that is nature, character, honor, authority, right? So if you receive a prophet in the nature of a prophet, you shall receive a what? A prophet's reward. And he, what is a prophet's reward? Well, usually you get killed. Every prophet was killed. It's been in God. It's been in Christ. The other thing is funny, you know, everybody don't think about it, but every one of them was rewarded by death, weren't they? Some violent, horrible death because they were prophets. Just the flesh dying, that's right. Shall receive a prophet's reward, and he that receives a righteous, literally, receives a righteous man in the name or the nature of a righteous man, shall receive a righteous man's reward, or literally receive a righteous reward, right? If I receive a righteous man in the nature of a righteous man, that means if someone comes to me and I receive him as a righteous person and I treat him as a righteous person, I receive him that way, then what kind of reward will you get back? A righteous reward. See? You will reap what you what? Sow. And whosoever shall give drink unto one of these little ones, a cup of cold water only in the nature or character of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. Now, these little ones isn't the right language. The language literally says, unto one of this small group. Unto one of this small group. Who's he talking about? First fruit. When you befriend someone that is in the first fruit, he said, you'll in no wise, if you treat them the way they should be treated in the nature of God, in the nature of Christ, if you treat them that way and you give them a cool drink of water, okay, in the nature of a disciple, a disciplined one, a student, that means you're giving honor to the disciple, I mean to the prophet, right? You give an honor to that little one. Or that one in that small group. Verily I say unto you, you shall in no wise lose his reward. Do you get that? He didn't say you'd lose your reward. You'll in no wise lose whose? The reward of Christ. You'll not lose the reward of Christ.
Doesn't that go right back to John when he's talking about when he offered the drink?
I'm stuck just a second.
You said, you know, whenever
You'll have the life in you. You'll have that Christ in you. Okay? And that's the reward. See, too long the church has looked at the rewards that God has for us, or His benefits that God has for us, and we think of it in a intellectual, carnal, natural, physical, some kind of way. Is it really that? Is it money that we have to spend? Is it nice homes and cars and boats and all this stuff? Is that what it's about? That has nothing to do with it. That stuff is all perishing. See? With the use of it. It all perishes with the use of it. And there's only one thing that is, and that's the mind of Christ. Right? That's a refreshing to one of these prophets. There's one of this small group, this first fruit. Okay? It's the first fruits he's talking about. If that word says a little one, the language says this small group, of this small group. See? Didn't Jesus say in Matthew 13 to strive to enter into the narrow gate? Because broad is the way and wide is the gate that leads to what? Destruction. But narrow is the gate and straight is the way that leads to life, and how many find it? That sound like a small group to you? Okay. There's a small group that's going to find this way in.
It says, who shall forgive a drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name
of... Or merely in the nature or character of the disciples. Okay. See? He says if you'll give it to it in that nature or character. Just, if you just give them a drink of water, that's a refreshing. If you give that to them in the same nature and care, not with the idea, okay, where's my reward? I done something good. Okay. I just did it and forgot about it. Okay. Did Jesus say, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing? If you go out and brag about what you've done, you know what you've done? He said, you've got your reward. See, man has heard you, and man's going to reward you. That's it. So you won't get the reward of God, will you? You've got to just let it go. Just do what you got to do is right. God's in your heart, and somebody comes with need, what will you do? You'll hear from God and give what God tells you to give. We don't give out of need, but we give out of the lead. God spoke it in my life many years ago. He let me see a man minister to someone out of the need and not the lead. And God spoke to me and said, don't touch her. Don't minister to that lady. And this man was standing, talking to a man and a woman, and the man couldn't stand it. He's going to jump in there and take care of this problem. And I'm still standing there talking to his wife, and this woman had enough demons that she'd have scared Legion to death. And when the man ran over and tried to lay hands on her, she went, "Rah!" And her eyes rolled back in her head and foam out of her mouth, and the guy couldn't even talk. He was so scared he couldn't even talk. And God said to me right there, did you see that? And I'm sitting there listening to his wife talking. In my mind, I'm talking to God, and I said, sure did. He said, don't you ever do that. That man ministered out of the need and not out of the lead. And people will call you uncompassionate, uncaring, inconsiderate when you'll stand and watch things go on and not touch them. But they don't know what you're hearing, do they? Only you know what you hear. And I've been accused of a whole lot of times of being inconsiderate and not taking care of situations. I know all kinds of things that I could do. I could run my legs off till they're just little nubs. Doing people that have problems and trying to fix them myself. And what would I have? Confusion and nothing. Little nubby legs. See? Have them all wore off, wouldn't it? I know things right now. I know a situation right now of a man who is going to be hurt in a situation. And there's two men involved, and I know the situation. I know something's going to hurt this one person. And I want in the worst way to jump in and do something about that. I shared it with you. I can't do it. I know it's going to happen, but it's a teaching process, and I got to just take my hands off of it. I could jump in there and say, hey, watch out! And I'd offend and alienate a bunch of people. I know it's going to happen, and I could just sit back and watch it go. You know how hard it is to watch that? Because I care about both of them. It's pretty hard to sit back and just watch it. But you know, I can't do nothing about it. If I do, I'm going to create more havoc, and it'll all come back on me. And I'll be the bad guy in the whole situation, and I'm doing nothing but trying to help. That's the situation you get in.
Don't pay for no trip to Nashville if God tells you to.
Yeah. But see, people don't understand.